Welcome to the fall. Welcome to a new season full of potential. Of course, the fall, normally the time of year when television networks roll out dozens and dozens of new shows. But in the streaming era, and with the pandemic changing viewing habits and scheduling habits, is there still a fall TV season? Is there still a television premiere week? And with the Emmys coming up, what can we learn about the state of the awards shows and how they've been changed by the pandemic? Those are just a few of the questions for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. So let's get to it. Let's cue the music. I'm Brian Stelter, and as you know, this is our weekly Reliable Sources podcast, our chance to go more in-depth, talking about a big, wide world of media. And this week, I wanted to talk about the entertainment space because this time of year, mid-September, usually a key time in Hollywood and the entertainment industry, the launch of so many new TV shows, including one I'm involved with, and we'll get to that later. But I have this sense that the TV season has profoundly changed because of streaming, because of on-demand, because of other factors. So I wanted to invite two of CNN's best who cover this for a living to talk more about it. Brian Lowry, a CNN media critic, a senior writer covering television, streaming, and film. And Sandra Gonzalez, senior reporter for CNN Media and Entertainment, all over the television and film beats. And both Sandra and Brian have been writing the TV OT column that appears weekly on CNN.com. So welcome, Brian. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And welcome, Sandra. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks.
So we're all here and we're looking ahead to what I think is a new season of television. But Sandra, is there any such thing as a TV premiere week anymore?
I'm kind of old school. I do believe in the concept of a fall TV season and the excitement around a bunch of new shows coming out and getting dumped over a period of time. I don't think it's a premiere week anymore. I don't think that's existed for a while because I think as of a few years ago, certain networks would start premiering their shows in October, and then it got a little deeper into October, and then it was like, okay, now we're just kind of previewing what we're going to show you in starting in early September, but you won't actually see it till like late October.
Right, right. And some of these networks this year specifically said they were trying to avoid that sense of a single week where it can get overwhelming. Brian, how do you view it?
I'm sort of old school about it, too. I mean, I still think there's something about, you know, people, at least people of a certain age, maybe not as much if you're, you know, if you've unplugged, but people of a certain age who sort of know that after the Emmys, once it's September, there's a week or around time in late September where the networks start bringing back the shows you already watch and throw on some new ones. And, you know, I get emails around this time of year from people saying, is there anything new for me to watch? Is there anything I should record? You know?
Yeah.
So I think there's still something around that. What's muddied it, certainly this year, is that the networks, the broadcast networks, have done fewer new shows, and the streaming networks and cable networks, which once, you know, years ago used to sort of avoid trying to compete with premiere week so they didn't have to share it, they're just right in there in the thick of it, throwing stuff against the wall like they always do. So it's a bit of a blur, but I do still think that you can look at this period and say, you know, this is a big deal for a lot of these programmers in terms of what their new season's going to look like.
I was Googling about this and I saw, you know, some websites refer to premiere week as being this coming week, Monday, September 20th. TVLine.com, for example, was calling it, you know, Monday the 20th, it starts. Sandra, is that the closest thing to a starting point, or have we already started?
I want to say that we've already kind of started. We've soft launched, because
soft
some of
launched.
My favorite shows,
okay,
right now, yeah, some of my favorite shows right now are already a couple of episodes into their first seasons, or some of my favorite episode shows of the new season are already a few episodes in.
And to what degree does this matter, you think? To what degree does it matter that there still is, you know, a time of year where there's all this energy around the TV business?
I honestly, I'm going to go to a show that I know you love, This Is Us. I think I would credit that show a few seasons ago for bringing back the excitement around this, because I think this is very much a litmus test week for people now, because that show, people were excited from the first trailer. It came out. It was huge. It sort of put some life back into the broadcast season. And I feel like now people are sort of chasing that feeling. Like, you have people bringing out some like pretty splashy projects, trying to see if people are going to like attach to them. But I'm going to call it like the This Is Us test now. Like, is if it hits with like a boom like that show did, congratulations, you might have a hit on your hands. Otherwise, it's like, okay, well, maybe we reorganize and try again next year. So I do think it matters to both like the business side of entertainment, but also to the fans, to the viewers who are looking for that This Is Us, who are looking for that gem to say, oh, look, this is why I still get excited about this season.
Right. Culturally, I want those communal experiences and moments, but I know it's getting harder and harder and harder every year to have them. I mean, is that a fair assessment, Brian? It's getting harder every year to have those communal experiences or breakthrough shows.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea, I mean, the audience is so fragmented now that the idea of, you know, big, broad, shared viewing experiences other than, you know, a few major sporting events, and, you know, we'll talk about it, but the award shows, which were once kind of that, are a shadow, you know, last year were a shadow of what they were. I think what you may see, you know, this year, a little bit in terms of heightening sort of excitement for the fall, is it's easy to forget because the last year has been such a blur, but last fall, because production was interrupted by the pandemic and things were delayed, you had this weird dribbled rollout of new shows. You had networks announcing shows that weren't in production and weren't ready. They were scrambling to put on reality shows and acquire Canadian dramas, you know, where you could tell because every fifth word someone says, eh, and, you know, that kind of thing. And there was a lot of spit and wire to put on a TV season through the fourth quarter last year, you know, with shows sort of dribbling out into November and the CW holding most of its shows until January. So I think there may be, you know, like a lot of things, we've seen a bit of pent-up demand for people who want to go sample some new shows and see if anything clicks for them.
Right, right. Sandra, are you seeing that also?
I am, and I do think we don't give Canada enough credit for getting us through last year. Thank you, Canada.
But what about pent-up demand? Do you sense that?
I think I do, and you can see it around a couple of shows, particularly the ones that are already established IP. I think people are excited about The Wonder Years, because that's one that I think is both familiar and new. And I think that's sort of a sweet spot that, like even your Doogie Howser, which premiered a couple of weeks ago, I believe, on Disney Plus, those are two shows that I think are hitting a sweet spot, that they're both familiar, but also new enough to be excited about, to let yourself get excited about. Because again, like Ryan said, like that's not a feeling we've had for a while.
Mm. What are you personally most jazzed about in this new season, Sandra?
New season. I'm a millennial, so I'm excited about stupid things like the return of Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Wait, that's happening? That's happening soon? I didn't realize that was imminent.
October.
Wow.
I'm pumped.
That's big.
It is. So I'm excited about something like that. But I'm one of these people that has my list of shows, and it's really hard for other things to kind of weasel in there. Right now, I'm loving Reservation Dogs, which is a brand new show airing on FX. But in terms of like some of the premieres that are coming, the thing I couldn't get over when I was trying to remind myself of all the things that broadcast is going to offer is that it's pretty much a lot of expansions of existing shows. You have your CSI Vegas, your NCIS Hawaii, your FBI International, and that's in addition to like all the Chicago shows on NBC. Like, that's so much of what's on broadcast right now.
Right.
You got to look for those like little gems in there that are like little leaps of faith. Like, NBC has Ordinary Joe coming out. CBS has a show that actually paneled at TCA a couple weeks that had a great panel called Ghosts. That's kind of like a quirky ghost comedy that I was kind of into. So it's things like that. I take a leap, take a hard leap at something that's unfamiliar to people and say, like, maybe people will like this. That's what
But to your point, you know, a lot of this is about expansion, doing even more CSI type shows. Brian Lowry, what's the right way for us to view that? Should we view that as managing decline? So the way to manage decline and to slow the decline of broadcast is to do more of what they know works?
Yeah, I mean, I think really the broadcasters, you're seeing it in two ways. One, it's brand extensions of what already works, and two, fewer new shows. You know, it used to be you'd see a fall season where networks would put on, you know, 5, 6, 7 new shows each. Now you're seeing them put on, you know, maybe 3. They just know they can't market that many new things at one time.
Right.
So they're trying to manage it. You know, I mean, you can look at that different ways. I'm dating myself with this, but, you know, there's this sort of image of broadcasting of Slim Pickens and Dr. Strangelove riding the nuclear bomb all the way down, you know, and that's that kind of is what it feels like, because you're seeing the network still trying to get people excited and still try to get interested. And the truth is they're part of these larger companies that are funneling resources like crazy into these streaming services that are, you know, sort of gobbling up the traditional TV business while we watch. So it's an interesting dynamic, which is, you know, they're trying to maintain their existing linear businesses while they transfer as much as they can into building these pay-to-view streaming networks. And it's in a lot of ways it parallels what the newspaper industry went through, which is, you know, trying to still get people to subscribe to the paper and have it thrown on their door while they were moving to reading everything online.
And we reached the point where now when something isn't immediately available on the streaming platform, there's surprise and confusion and frustration. Like, I'm thinking of American Crime Story Impeachment, which, what's the deal, Brian? It's not available the next day on Hulu the way that most FX shows are, right?
It's because of a pre-existing deal with 20th Century Fox, but what was 20th Century Television? It's now 20th Television. It's going to go later to Netflix instead of going the next day on Hulu, like most of the adult-oriented Disney stuff does. So, right. I mean, it's right now it's only available on FX. And if you're a cord cutter or don't have access to FX, you're not seeing it. Fortunately, there are going to be 800, you know, political think pieces about it. So you can, that'll tide you over.
But let's call that what it is, though, which is a mess. Nobody cares about what your business deal is. Nobody cares in your contracts. Think about your viewers. They want to watch this. You're telling them no. You're telling them wait for Netflix. And that's pretty enraging and frustrating on their part. So they need to really put the business part aside, change their strategy. I don't care if it happens in the middle of airing the show. That's a mess. And that's embarrassing.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I want to go to this idea of how people expect to consume versus the artificial boundaries and constraints that are still being put upon viewers. You mentioned, Sandra, you know, it's hard for a new show to weasel its way into your queue, like your list of shows that you're going to watch on demand. So that is fundamentally how a lot of us now watch TV. Do you feel like you cover this world differently because of that? Like, do you approach your beat differently because you know that that's the way that many of your readers are watching, as opposed to, oh, yeah, it's a fall premiere week. Here's the new schedule.
I'm going to say largely no, because if I like something, I'm going to write about it. It doesn't matter where I found it. And again, this comes from a point of view of privilege, because I get the screeners. So I don't even have to make that decision of where I'm going to watch it or whether I'm going to give Paramount Plus my 2 bits or whatever in order to watch a show. I get it for free. I get it put in front of my face and I get to say, oh, I like this. I'm going to write about it and hope somebody else is watching, hoping somebody put down the money to get the streaming service. So I just kind of write about what's good and what I enjoy. It doesn't matter where I find it. But I think the decision is a lot harder for regular consumers who are having to make that decision between, do I want to subscribe to Hulu to get this show, or do I want to subscribe to CBS All Access or Paramount Plus, I guess what it is now, in order to get this show, and they have to make those types of decisions. But from a coverage point of view, no, it's just about whether it's good or not, whether it makes me laugh, whether it makes me feel anything. I need to feel anything, Brian. It's the pandemic problem. Help me feel.
Love it. Brian, do you think differently about what to review or when because of these dynamics?
I do. I mean, I think we're all more susceptible to traffic concerns. You know, one of the issues with something like Disney Plus, you know, where again with the streaming services, we occasionally get dollops of data, but we honestly don't know how many people are watching most of their shows. But we know what's streaming, you know. So when Marvel put on Loki, we got drawn into writing about that show every week because we knew every week there were going to be people getting up that day and avidly watching it or watching it in the middle of the night and wanting to read about it. And, you know, which is, it's fine to sort of scratch that itch and serve that demand. But we don't have infinite resources and there's a ridiculous amount of content. So I do think that, you know, we make hard decisions sometimes about things that don't get attention that might deserve it. Just because we're not sure there's an audience there for it or there's an avid readership for it. You know, I think about in the, I'm really dating myself here, but at one point, you know, when I was at Variety, they made the decision to not review every single new show premiering in the fall, which was a big deal until that they had reviewed everything. They wanted to be the Bible of the industry and the book of record. It's just no longer feasible anymore. Mm. So you know, you make educated guesses and you respond to what you think people want.
All right, now I've got to ask, have you watched the first episode of The Morning Show yet?
I've watched the first three episodes.
Oh, you've watched the first three. So as some people know, I'm a consulting producer on the show for Apple TV Plus. I have not watched any of the new season yet, so you're ahead of me. All right, give us your honest review. Go ahead, break it to
my
me.
My honest review is I think it's quite interesting that they chose to, and I confess, I got to the point where it really started to become part of the plot, so I have to see where the rest of it goes, but I got to the point, I thought it was really interesting that they worked coronavirus into it. Yes. They went back to sort of the outbreak of it and the discussions within the network about whether this was a big deal and whether they needed to cover it and whether they needed to respond to it while all the network, you know, the customary network politics and was going on. I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was kind of a big bet because it, you know, it means that they had to take the show back to before, and you're watching them sort of go through it as all of us went through it.
Yes. Yeah. Without giving anything away, I'll just say, based on what you see in the trailers, clearly you see January, February, and into March of 2020. So you're seeing these characters live the preamble of the pandemic. And it's interesting. Sandra, have you seen other, forget about, you know, my involvement with Morning Show. Have you seen other shows work the pandemic into storylines yet? Because it certainly is a risky move. You know, do people want to relive it? Do people want to be reminded of this? You know, is it going to date the show? Have you seen other shows work the pandemic in?
Well, all last season of Grey's Anatomy was very much about the pandemic. And frankly, right. I respect those types of moves. If it fits in organically with the show, and if your show isn't married to some particular timeline, like, oh, a season is every hour or something, like 24-esque, then obviously you want to stay with whatever you were doing. But when a show, like a medical show or something like that, does not cover the pandemic, it really makes me angry. You're living in some fantasy world that we're all not in. And maybe somebody likes that, but it just doesn't feel right. Because we've been in this now for 18 months, and I think people that don't tackle it. I was really actually excited when the Morning Show said they were going to tackle it because it's a news show. Like, there's no way to not address the biggest news story of, you know, the century on a show about news and incorporating that with your existing storyline. So frankly, I think it's like a coward's way out when they don't and they should.
All right. We're surveying the television landscape. And I now want to look ahead to the big award show of the year. The Emmys are coming up. We're going to preview that with Sandra and Brian in just a moment. And we are back here on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter, talking with Brian Lowry and Sandra Gonzalez about all things television and streaming. So we're talking on Friday, September 17th. The primetime Emmys are this Sunday, the 19th. They're airing live on CBS. We mentioned earlier how the pandemic upended so many shows. It upended the Emmys last year. But Sandra, this year the Emmys will be more like a normal award show, right?
For better or worse, yes.
Kind of back to normal. Brian, you have a preview of this up on CNN.com, looking at the award shows, the relative popularity of award shows. What are you expecting?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's interesting. Last year, the Emmys delivered a record low rating, and everyone said, oh, boy. And then it turned out that that record low rating actually looked pretty good, decline-wise, relative to the drops that came later for the Grammys and Oscars and Golden Globes. So we'll see if it, I think the drop in Emmy viewing is attributable to a lot of factors, starting with the fact that the clips are available, you know, almost immediately, and you don't need to sit through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's some hope, at least, that they can kind of stop the bleeding in terms of people tuning it out. And I think, you know, if I was at any one of those other organizations that presents awards, I'd be watching this pretty closely when the numbers roll in Monday or Tuesday or whenever they come in, to see if there was any sort of sign of that, or if just the declines are going to continue and we have to accept this as, you know, the new normal, that award shows are going the same way as the broadcast industry in general, which is, as you said, kind of managing decline.
Yeah. I really appreciated what this year's Emmys host said. Cedric the Entertainer gave an interview to CBSN talking about, you know, what it's going to be like to host. It's going to be live. It's going to have a limited number of nominees present, but, you know, kind of getting back to normal. And Cedric said, television got us through this last year. Everyone started binge watching everything. It was something we trusted. That's what we should honor. We should honor television because it got us through the pandemic. How true does that sound to you, Sandra?
True-ish. I mean, it depends on what TV got you through it. Like, my TV was 20 years old. I was watching ER reruns and stuff like that. So most people were watching Friends. Are we going to see all the TV that got us through it represented? Absolutely not. They had their moment. But I would like to see, to his point, the TV that actually got people through it getting recognized. And by that, I mean things that you wouldn't normally associate with getting awards at these types of shows, like WandaVision, Mandalorian, maybe even Bridgerton. Give something to The Boys. Like, give something to these popular shows that appeal. You're laughing at The Boys getting an award. I hear that, Brian.
No, I'm only laughing because having been one of those boys, it's true. I could use something.
Yeah, but you've written about this in regards to the Oscars before, where we really lost something when we just started giving awards to these movies that maybe a lot of people didn't see. And I like Ted Lasso. I like Hacks. I like all those shows. But I really would love to see something like the shows I just mentioned getting some love, because they really are what a lot of people got to get excited about in this past year.
Hmm. I mean, I do agree with that. I really think, you know, in a weird sort of way, of all the factors that have sort of hurt awards over the last few years, one of them is just there. You know, there was a time when a big popular movie like Titanic would win Best Picture. And, you know, ER and NYPD Blue in their heyday were winning Best Drama. And now, aside from the fact we don't know how many people are watching most of these things, you know, especially on the streaming services, we have moved, I think, to much more of sort of an art house sensibility in all our awards presentations, which, you know, is doesn't mean that the work isn't deserving, but it does sort of rob a lot of people, I think, who might otherwise have a rooting interest in what wins. You know, when they announce what won and your reaction isn't just, I didn't see that, but it's, wow, I've never even heard of that. that I think that depressing effect on, on the whole kind of experience.
But aren't we only going to move more in that direction? Aside from what ends up being nominated, however many number of television shows there are this year, there'll be more next year and the year after that. Is there anything stopping this?
No, it's true. I mean, you saw it a few years ago when the Oscars flirted with a popular film category, which was which is, an idea that most people rejected as seeming sort of condescending. But, the idea of incorporating an ethos into your organization that says that, yes, No Country for Old Men is a legitimate Best Picture winner, and so is Black Panther, which was one of those rare Marvel movies that actually got nominated. I think it's you can't tell people what to like, and you're absolutely going to see things get more fragmented. But there are opportunities to kind of broaden the menu and recognize work that's, going to speak to more people. I don't know if anyone's if that's going to get through to these organizations, but you have seen the Emmys and especially the Academy with the Oscars try to broaden their ranks. And one of the advantages of doing that is maybe it leads to some different kinds of choices.
Right. Well, it's like I always say, the future of media is all of the above, more of everything. There's going to be more and more and more of everything, and that's certainly true in TV. So we're looking ahead to the Emmys on Sunday. Sandra, what's in your TV OT column this weekend?
There's an Emmy preview, and I play casting couch with the Lula Rich documentary, and cast the fake miniseries that I want to see.
Okay. Maybe a producer role for you in the future. There we go. People can check out the column at cnn.com/entertainment. Sandra and Brian, thank you both for the conversation. And thanks everybody for joining me here on this week's Reliable Sources podcast. We will see you on TV this Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on CNN, well before the Emmys. And of course, you can read more from Brian and Sandra and the entire team in our nightly Reliable Sources newsletter. Sign up for free at reliablesources.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.